You are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Well, I'm Jody Charlotte, and I call myself an executive coach because 70% of my work really is focused on the coaching relationship. And I'm very blessed to do this work because how did I get here? I had a fantastic coach that really helped me figure out who I was and how to find my purpose and really understand what I was about.
Okay.
And I wish that for everyone.
Okay.
Because it is life changing in so many ways, because I think humans, we're always, you know, I mean, we're growing and developing and we're going through this natural evolution of coming into who we are.
Right.
But it can be a scary journey without a Sherpa along the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was just very blessed to have that anchor. And I have two businesses, actually, Potential Matters, which was founded in 2004, really to help people build careers that matter. And central to that is really feeling powerful and building the career that matters to you. And we go through those critical turns of figuring out what we want to do with our lives and what is our purpose and how do we make it all come together. And so that practice really focused on really helping people discover what they're about.
Okay.
When they get the job, doesn't stop there. It's making it meaningful and continuing to be successful.
Okay.
And the third is that really critical term where you almost become your own brand, that power you get where people reach out to you because you've really established yourself in the community. So from a private standpoint, it's really that life cycle of continually building that career that matters to you.
Right.
But about 7 years ago, our clients were being very successful, so I began to move back into the corporate arena because I spent 20 years.
Is that the old work yourself out of a job thing?
I call it building a life cycle of clients.
Because
clients become more successful as they advance, as they grow, they want to bring that sense of meaning into their work.
Mm.
And so as they move into places of power, it's like, wow, this coaching has been so good for me, and I want to bring it to my team. I want to bring it to my org. I want to have the same kind of experience. So the good news about having successful clients is they go on to have successes. And so through that organic growth, we developed our corporate practice, which is Acceleration Partners, and we're really a leadership brain trust of independent coaches that have come together to put our bodies of work together to make it easy and powerful for clients to get the kind of results they need.
Wow.
And so we focus on leadership development. From emerging leaders to senior leaders, we do team acceleration, meaning there's so much going on. The world is changing so fast. How do we, it's hard enough to get one life in order, much less a large group of people.
Right.
And then the third is really that leadership learning. How do we find the topics that are really going to accelerate? There's so much going on out there. And how do we bring the right message, the right topics, where they are to help them accelerate the power of the organization and the impact on the team and the enterprise.
Okay.
And then I have one little extra program, which is near and dear to my heart and my own personal purpose, which is women in leadership. Just really, most of my clients are men because most executives are men.
Right. Now that's fascinating. We're going to bookmark that. I want to come back and talk about that a bit more, but I really want to hear you talk more about your women in leadership work. Primarily, well, it is Women's History Month.
It's all month. There's a lot of activities going on celebrating women.
Yes. And it's really exciting to watch all of that unfold. I have a problem. The demographics of my practice are a good number of women as well. I've begun to notice that demographic profile takes shape enough that I want to better understand, what's behind that. Like, what is the posture of someone that raises their hand and says, I want coaching? And it's really interesting that you talk about in your leadership practice that it's a pretty prominent male presence in that work.
Well, in the executive work. Just statistically speaking, 85% of our executives are men. I mean, the statistics for women have been pretty stagnant for about a decade, and we've got a lot of work to do.
Right.
And so, and I began to hear the different conversations between my male executive clients and kind of my up-and-coming female clients.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really almost your own scientific little lab to hear this conversation that's going.
Mm-hmm.
Coaching over, I've been coaching, this year's you're 13.
Wow.
And so you get to kind of have your own focus group in many ways. And so about 4 years ago with my other partner, Gene Gallivan, male, we co-teach this leadership power for women work because we, it's interesting, his practice is predominantly female. And he coaches a lot of female leaders. And so it just, it's been an interesting experience to unfold,
yeah.
even for me as a woman, to become more aware of what's happening to women in the workplace. I mean, you read it, but when you hear it, you experience it, you see it, you just want to, I mean, at the end of the day, we want more diverse leaders. And so there's just a special place there for the work we need to do. And we'll talk a little bit more because I just got back from the United Nations. And
well, now's a good time of this.
Boy,
because,
I mean, yeah.
You know, so I was on fire when I had a chance a couple weeks ago to chat with Jody in between sessions with the time she was spending in New York with you and women.
It was the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women. It's
okay.
Number 61. It really is a movement where. For over 2 weeks, they're coming together to really look, you know, 8,000 plus people come together across the globe to really look at what's happening to women across the universe.
Okay.
And it was a humbling, I mean, I can't even describe it. I mean, I just got back this week and I mean, I'm still processing, you know, what you learn and what you see. And we, you know, you think about the work that we do in a business setting, and you go and take this on a global setting and see the issues of economic empowerment and education and, everything from, you know, sex trafficking to women's rights. It just puts it on a whole new playing field.
Well, you know, it's a fresh conversation for me as well. We just... back towards the end of January, hosted the On Purpose Conference, and one of our most prominent sponsors was Global Women for Wellbeing.
Right.
And they are all on top of that issue. Shout out to them since that I now have to make sure I send this link to make sure that she does the show. But even more importantly, I would love to connect you to her, primarily because they are out in front of trying to understand the challenges that are unique to women that connect to well-being from a women in leadership perspective, from the perspective that a lot of the research around well-being is based on, you know, observations from, you know, men populations, and a lot of the programs that are being funneled coming out of that research are most effective on men. And so they're really focused on trying to make sure there is, you know, effectiveness that's happening with those programs and their ability to impact, you know, what quite honestly is a challenge in making sure that women are properly represented in our leadership ranks.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. I think this is a, you know, I mean, for me, you know, in the beginning, it was really helping people build careers that matter and helping women find their power. Mm-hmm. Women have, and what's so fascinating about coaching and seeing the different dynamics is, if I look at the executive leaders that I'm coaching, a lot of the skill, and I guess they would, I hate this term, they call them soft skills, but I think they're the hard skills.
Yeah.
The relationship power, the ability to influence, the ability to coalesce, those are the skills at the higher level leadership that we're really coaching about and inspiring, motivating on a much grander scale.
Right.
And so those are the skill sets. And it's interesting because as I coach with women who are up and coming, they already have a lot of those skill sets.
Right.
So it's paradoxical to me that these higher level skill sets, but I guess early on in our careers, it's that, you know, risk taking, rough and tumble, kind of fight the good fight that gets us to the chair.
Right.
And so it's just women have amazing gifts to lead.
I completely agree with you. And, you know, it's really frustrating sometimes to see, you know, prominent male executive levels with companies that are so tone deaf to issues. I mean, you see what's unfolding with Uber and its executives, right?
Travis needs a coach.
Yeah.
Strong female leadership coach.
Get inside of what's happening with even, you know, my observation has always been companies that have, you know, highly volatile and dynamic markets, they don't really have the time or energy to have, you know, what are some of the more foundational discrimination practices, but they also have to be more conscious about the way that they reach talent.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, even their reaction to some of the challenges that will surface within their cultures, even their reaction on how they're going to deal with it. You see market analysts, I remember watching, just being jaw-dropping, you know, just blown away at some of the market analysts that were hearing that and going, you know what? Their culture is never going to change. It's never going to change unless you want these companies to be something fundamentally different. It's almost as if they're throwing up their hands. And
I think it's a complex issue that mm-hmm. that it just layers. And you know, it's funny because I was doing we do a whole talk on the stages of women. We're really trying to, in our work, help women kind of make those critical turns. And there's so much out there. I mean, you know, women are over-mentored. There's a gazillion things out there giving advice. It's like self-help issue of the day. And, we, you know, what we're trying to do is simplify it to help see that there's a real developmental process as women go through. And even for me as a woman, I mean, I thought I was all that in a bag of chips.
You are.
It was kind of like I was evolving and I was progressing. And I had good mentors, all male, I must admit. I think I had an early role model that was very female. It was very powerful for me, but my first female mentor was not a good experience.
Okay.
And I thought, gosh, if this is strong female leadership, I got to get into something.
You know, that's a whole nother thing.
It was not a good experience. But fortunately, I've always had, you know, I've always really had good mentors and people that I've learned from. And I think we have to have different role models. There's not one person that's going to be the holy grail. Very fortunate that I always say mentors and even sponsors are like a collection of skills that you really have to learn from different people. It's almost like your own collage of greatness.
That's fascinating. I think it sets up a question I'd love to have you respond to. And so imagine that you are, and I'm going to try to describe the avatar of what's likely to be the listener for the show. So imagine you are a woman that's in the kind of director to vice president range, and they likely also have an ear to purpose. So purpose talks, you know, speaks to them, whether they are necessarily dialed in on it and moving forward on it is part of the question, or whether it's something that they haven't quite figured it out, they haven't had an opportunity to discover it. And you're trying to make your way, you know, forward in your organization. So you're trying to make moves up. Like, if, you know, what, how would you go about having them think through what's the right, you know, mentor, advocacy, coaching, just the advisory infrastructure to have in place? Like, how do you even start assessing what you have in place and figuring out what you still need to get in place in order to get the trajectory of your career moving in the right direction?
Well, I'll start with the first piece, is that whole sense of purpose. And I was actually in a coaching engagement for a gentleman who reports into a female president.
Okay.
And, you know, as is the case, you know, when as an executive coach, we were interviewing and talking, you know, what's perspective on this particular coachee. And then, of course, I turned my conversation to her because she was the first female president of this organization. And I said, okay, now I got some questions for you because I'm curious. You know, obviously you've achieved this. And I love it when you really talk. I always say there are leaders that you want to be and you really admire, and there's something about it that just draws you in. And there are others and you're thinking, not so much. And this particular leader is, you know, I just remember she was sitting at her desk. I mean, she runs a gazillion dollar organization.
Mm-hmm.
She's drinking tea. She's calm. She, like, you know, I felt like I was at a spa.
Right.
And she said the greatest advice I got was my male mentors would just be myself. And I thought, well, wow. Okay, there we go.
Right.
And, you know, it's funny because I think men do a better job of compartmentalizing. I mean, I think of my lovely, wonderful, fantastic husband. It's like, he's at work, he's at home, and never the two shall be.
Right.
Like, there's, you know, it's just easy for him to compartmentalize that. But as I work with women, it's much more integrated. I think it's the way our brains work. I think it's the way we're socialized. I don't think we can read to people.
Well, you know, I think that's really fascinating. And frankly, I'm on team authentic, right?
Yeah.
So I'm doing, you know, I'm big on you being who you are. And frankly, and I think not enough leaders embrace the natural differences in men and women. I mean, you do. I mean, you start to unpack issues like what's the emotional landscape and the difference in men and women. And I just remember, you know, when you know leading a transformation, I had a woman that was on my team who, you know, was emotional, and in conversation she would cry. I so valued the contributions she had to make. To me, I would not be moved or, you know, handle anything differently when that would happen. So it would be, other people would watch this strange thing unfold. She would start to cry. I would hand her a tissue and we would keep talking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
that's exactly what I had as a leader. I mean, I had this conversation yesterday with a leader. He's got, he is trying, I think men feel uncomfortable in terms of how to navigate
right.
that sometimes.
Right.
I'm like,
but
what do I do?
Is.
I'm like, I get a tissue and go, wow,
right.
we're really having this strong emotional experience.
Exactly.
Let's process
exactly.
it. I mean, I think that's really emotional power. I think that
I agree.
The fact of the matter is we're human beings. We have emotions. Emotional power or emotional intelligence is really about the right emotion at the right time to the right audience.
Exactly.
And, you know, we were just talking about, you know, one of my leaders was being teased last night at a dinner about how he had no emotions or because he's very, you know, business-centric. And he said, spent a long time squashing all his emotions. And so I said, that's not part of the coaching agenda. He was jesting. But I said, you know, we trust people based on emotion.
You know, and I was going to say, I feel like that, to me, that would be a concern if someone was emotionless, right? Because when you think about
I coach people, yeah,
uh-huh.
relationships,
communication,
everything,
team dynamic,
trust,
all those things.
Everything is all emotional vibe.
Right.
Coming back to the other question you said about the men, and it was so funny because I heard this from a up-and-coming, really phenomenal leader at Honda Motor Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Who is a wonderful kind of, it's a very interesting culture, you know, in terms
mm-hmm.
of kind of the Japanese kind of mindset.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, there's no male conspiracy. And the reality is, I think, you know, there's, when I did my master's in counseling, you learn about privilege, you know, white privilege,
mm-hmm.
gender privilege.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like an awareness blinder. It's like no matter how much you want to have empathy, you can't really know it, be it, until you walk in their shoes.
That's exactly.
And so I don't think that, yes, there are behaviors, but I do think that's why I think it's so important that until we see women's movements that become gender movements, that become like that, you know, Jean and I always talk about this, until the men are in the room with these women's conferences,
right.
until we're having a dialogue between X and Y, you know, until we are there together, there
right.
will be no
right.
real social change. So
exactly.
we've got to foster a different kind of dialogue, and that's why, you know, I laugh because Jean always said he's been kicked out of every women's conference because they're like, oh, men aren't allowed. He's like, but I care about the issues,
right,
too.
Right, right, right.
Sounds
like a man of the long heart.
Oh, yeah.
And, as well,
yeah, yeah,
mostly
yeah.
because that's the demographic profile of the clients that I serve. But, you know, for the most part, those issues really matter to me. I feel like they are, it's kind of a glass half empty, half full, right? You know, it certainly is a challenge with our status quo that, you know, women are underrepresented in the executive ranks. I see that as a major opportunity. To me, that signals there's some underperformance that's happening.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That can be shored up and empowered if we can create this movement of women into those in comfortable ways that allow us to understand and adopt and continue to thrive with a stronger women presence in those levels.
And the other thing too, I mean, there's a lot coming out now about the economic impact power.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're already seeing some of that, you know, in terms of retail sectors, women have a lot of power. We shop and we shop well.
Right.
I mean, it's like an amazing statistic that we have 80% of consumer decisions are made.
Exactly.
Women.
Exactly.
Now we got to work on helping women leverage their power.
Right.
Because I said, can you imagine, you know, if Amazon.com is not treating their customers well, if we just stopped shopping
just
for a moment, what would happen?
How about that?
How about that? Okay. You want to treat women?
Right.
And in a way, it would be very painful for me because I have an intimate relationship with them. But
you know, we could go there on that topic because. I really feel like mobilizing that power across a number of underrepresented populations is frankly the most likely movement that our societal and political world are going to listen to. I mean, Uber is a great example, right? They had to learn some tough lessons that hopefully other organizations are looking at and, you know, taking notes.
Right.
About how you build cultures, how those cultures show up in the organization, how you treat your people, how you know, what you embrace as values and priorities for organizations. So I completely agree with you. As consumerism starts to mobilize and, you know, make statements with the way that we buy, that will yield the type of power, economic power that you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and again, you know, we have hard and soft power, and, you know, but at the end of the day, it is interesting to me, you know, helping women really leverage their voice. It's powerful. I mean, there's a lot of great research coming out about, you know, just having more women on the boards, but diversity in general. I mean, we do a lot of work around teams and, you know, diverse teams, diverse thought. I mean, we get more holistic solutions. We get more innovation. I mean, it's there. It's acting upon it.
Right.
You know, kind of breaking those old habits and norms that candidly have been set in our businesses for, you know, decades.
Right.
Even our leadership development programs, you know, are cultivated and created by men.
Right.
And so, and I remember talking to my male mentor, somebody I incredibly respect, and he's like, leadership is leadership. And I said, yeah, but if you're listening, there's just different nuances between what will accelerate women and what will accelerate men, because the playing field is different. And to say, you know, equality is one size fits all is candidly, I think, but naive. We're working through, you know, there's different dynamics that are happening. And I think we have to understand that uniqueness so we can tap the full potential. I mean, we even talk down to individuals. I mean, the work you and I do with individuals, really having them find that that incredible sense of who they are and that purpose that's unique to each of us. And you just see it by, you know, roots and audience and level, and, you know, we're all, it really is. We have to think about how we're coaching and when we're coaching. You know, that's one of the things that has been very central to my growing purpose, is that we got to get in there earlier. And I have to tell you that I as a woman, I didn't even know kind of what it, coaching, I think I'm, again, I think I'm all that knowledgeable.
Right.
And it's so fascinating to learn and reveal kind of, you know, we're coaching, first of all, I think leadership development, we're just, it's like most people don't even get leadership development until they're 42. I mean, it's just, if they ever get any leadership development at all, it's horrible. What a missed opportunity.
Right.
Why are we not, you know, doing more class work, doing more work kind of in that early stage? Imagine what our organizations would be if we were doing more purpose work earlier, if it was embedded in the heart of our learning program.
Well, you are still in my thunder.
Oh,
I absolutely
God. I mean,
want to have you talk about
what
that looks like.
We were just talking about it last night. It was a group of leaders, you know, probably 20 leaders we were talking about. And I'm like, imagine the experience that you're having. If everybody felt that same way, how powerful your organization would be to lift up, and where your focus would be.
Wow.
You would be focusing on more higher level things. You would be focusing on changing the business landscape. You would be focusing on communities. You would be focusing at a different level. Right now, you're focusing inward because we haven't built that lifting base that is going to motivate and inspire and have people really focusing on it. And you just begin to see, it clicks in, you know, that purpose is not a fuzzy thing. It's a critical core that is just, it's just so powerful.
It's no more fuzzy than, say, for a company where, you know, a strategy, right? It's a game plan. It's your X's and O's. And the notion that each person would show up to their job and just work what the bullet points on the job description, you know, say to work, and without any consideration for who they are as an individual and the gifts that they bring and what they're passionate about and how those should influence the impact they want to make and show, have them show up in an inspired way, is ludicrous.
Right. I would kind of equate it to like running a race with no view. You know, it's
exactly.
kind of like...
Exactly, just running it.
You just run it, and
but
our
know,
work is a long race. I mean,
it is.
We've got a long journey ahead, and we've got a lot of work life, and you know, a lot of impact to make. And
right,
so.
And you probably deal with the frustrations of seeing people that feel like they're just running. Right, there's nothing. You know, they don't know how close they are to a finish line. They don't know, you know, who's enjoying watching their race.
They don't know if they're in the right
race. Right, if they're in the right race. I mean, we could go on and on with that analogy. But I think it's, you know, I really think it's fascinating. And you know, I celebrate the work that you're doing within the leadership realm. And, you know, to have it come from such a credible voice to be able to inform executives about the nuances about accelerating people as leaders based on who they are individually and being able to appreciate the differences in them and what it takes to move them all forward. I think, you know, I'm glad to know that you're on the front line doing that.
Well, I tell you, it's I always say the good news and the bad news is we never work, we'll never run out of work.
Right.
I mean, this
right.
is you know, as my wife said, you know, what do? And I said, well, I help companies become more functional or eliminate dysfunction. He's like, wow, we're a target rich environment. Yes, I recognize that.
Right.
So, you know, but I think we have a lot of work to do. And the good news is the next generation gets to kind of change the rules as much as, you know, our current generation.
And man, are they setting up the changes,
they,
right?
I don't make the rules, but they get to change
right.
it. And,
right.
You know, we see, you know, there's a movement. They're more socially conscious. They're you know, I think they're going to have more economic power to buy social media. And I think that the good news about, you know, the transparency that's being forced is that purpose is becoming more and more important on the leadership landscape, on the brand landscape, on, you know, I always say I don't judge how we get there in the grand scheme of things as long as we get there.
How about that?
If it's being driven by economics, right, as long as you are building a community that matters and is sustainable,
right,
and it's more power to you.
Well, I, you know, that is a great place to, you know, put in a cliffhanger. So if this were a good network show, then you've just given us a great cliffhanger that we'll use to take a break. and when we come back, I want to pick up where you just kind of left off with starting to imagine, you know, and put on our futuristic glasses on what our workplaces and teams might look like if we start to embrace purpose as a priority. But to that, I will we'll take a quick break, give our listeners a quick chance to, you know, grab a sip of coffee, and we'll be right back after this message.
We want to thank today's sponsor, Up to Me Magazine, a new uplifting and inspiring magazine with stories of purposeful living, such as Meet the Minimalist, the story and journey of Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Milburn. Less stuff, more meaningful life. And an up-close and personal conversation with Will Haygood, author and associate producer of the acclaimed film The Butler by Lee Daniels, and so much more. So get your subscription today at uptomemagazine.com. That's up, the number 2, magazine.com. And what's your story? Now we return back to our program.
Outstanding. Welcome back. So we're here with Jody Charlotte, and we are deep in the trenches of a great conversation, and we're going to pivot a bit. We've had an opportunity to hear from her on the work that she's doing, you know, specifically around driving leadership development amongst executives with the special heart for women in leadership and the issues there. But you know, now I'm going to be a bit selfish because I invited her on because I wanted to tap into her smarts on a topic that is near and dear to me and the movement that I'm trying to help bring to the impact of work that I'm doing within companies as well. And part of what is a challenge for a number of leaders when you talk to them about purpose. And there's so many, that conversation is rich because on the surface, it's a very inspiring, feels like it's, you know, nice to have, should be kind of thing. Yeah, purpose is something that we should hold as a priority, and maybe even they say they do. But when you look at, you know, the levels of fulfillment within their talent populations, and you look at the lack of engagement, you know, when you look at their either engagement surveys or employee satisfaction, you know, feedback, it's, you know, apparent and frankly, you know, widespread in organizations that it still is an aspiration, you know, it's something to work towards. And so I really want to talk about, you know, if you take the work that you're doing to develop leaders and you come at it from a perspective of encouraging programmatically each person to discover and pursue purpose in their careers, how that might transform the team that we work on, or the teams that we work with and the workforce population. Like, what does that look like to you?
Well, first let me, you know, it's interesting because I think we want to evolve our leaders to care about these things. But while all this is going on, leaders are growing and developing. And, you know, we study and believe in a body of work called the Leadership Agility Model. It was a great body body of work, an award-winning book by Bill Joyner up in Boston, and that as leaders we're growing. Let's like, you know, we see all this research that was done on how children grow from infancy, and then it's kind of like you get to adulthood and there it is.
Right.
But as leaders, we are growing through these different mindsets. And, you know, we have to know where the leader is, because if you're an early stage leader who, and he talked about these wonderful mindsets of, you know, from expert where you're really that first, you know, I get recognized because I do stuff and I know stuff. And then you kind of go into that achiever orientation where you have this kind of binary getting outcomes. You can be strategic, but you're really kind of in that success. And then you go to the catalyst mode where you're building kind of that ecosystem of success up to co-creator and even synergist where, you know, you're really seeing kind of this connection to a greater world.
Oh, wow.
So as leaders, we're growing and changing. So the first thing is just knowing where people are and helping to change that leader's mindset to understand themselves as leaders and how to kind of create the environment and what the impact.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it's like, you know, it's speaking the language of leadership or the language of the leader and where they are, because you really have to go where people are to kind of tie it back. You know, it's kind of like, all right, it's like target marketing messaging, you know, it's kind of like if you have somebody in expert mode, then you can begin to help them understand how purpose is going to help them be a greater expert, how their team's going to be recognized for their expertise, how, you know, working with that kind of mindset. But what's interesting, you have to kind of evolve them up to these higher forms, because these higher forms feel, in the beginning, they feel so lofty and visionary.
Yeah.
And how do we translate that back to day to day?
Well, how do you get them bought into that? Like, you know, in a lot of cases, I mean, you've driven enough change both individually and organizationally, and people in cultures to realize there's a pretty hefty amount of resistance to doing anything new, right? And so how do you inspire leaders to this, you know, these lofty next levels? How do you help them understand what's in it for?
Well, I think that's the power of coaching. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think that's, you know, one of the things is I spent my first 20 years in communication. And you learn all the change communication top-down, organic, bottom-up, all that.
Right.
But one of the reasons I went to coaching, because if you can change a leader, you can change an org, like one person.
Right. Right.
So if you can work with a leader, and you just really have to understand what their overt and secret needs are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at the end of the day, people want to be successful. They want to have good outcomes. They want to be recognized for contribution. I mean, I think as human beings, we need to be productive. And I would say most of us really want to work in a positive environment.
Right.
So, I mean, the conditions are there. The basic conditions are already there.
Right.
I think we can kind of, hone in on the fact that I don't find too many leaders that go in and go, really, I want to make my people less miserable.
Right.
And
right.
I think that is where the awareness and the actions and the transparency, and the coaching relationship comes in and begins to help them connect the dots. And just really the power of helping them begin to see and the payout. I mean, I have clients that a year later will go, you told me this was going to be good, but wow.
Yeah.
I can imagine how good it could be when I have an empowered team, or I can go away on vacation and the system isn't dependent on me, and I come back and be really proud that, you know what, I could actually step away. That's kind of my litmus test for knowing you've built a powerful team and a powerful organization when your team is operating on a day-to-day basis in a power powerfully.
Right.
And guess what? You get to go do things that are going to help you be more powerful.
Now, are you finding challenges even getting people to the point to be able to have that coaching conversation? When you look at across the landscape of leaders that really need, particularly if you look at like leaders, let's look at them on a continuum from the most engaged, inspired, presence, kind of like what Gallup does, right?
Mm-hmm.
The most engaged, inspired, presence, dialed in, getting their best performance, to the least engaged, the actively disengaged. When you think about, people that are more to this end of the continuum of the disengagement, they may not even be coming to the conversation around coaching.
Yeah.
And, in some ways, it's to their own dismay. It's certainly consequential for them and will certainly, if it's sustained, they may not necessarily have an opportunity to lead in that way. But are you finding people are coming to that conversation from a coaching perspective, or is it that we're kind of hitting them from a leadership development perspective with, more of a shotgun approach that, gets some of the, I think, really powerful opportunities for them to evolve?
Well, I mean, it's all across the board. I think we could do a shout out to Brandon Smith, who talked about emotions are contagious.
Absolutely.
Success is contagious.
Mm-hmm.
And, so you want to capitalize on the champion of your actively engaged, because people see them, experience them very differently.
Okay.
And merely engaged, because they're on the cusp and there's only a little, they only need a little tending really tip over the line.
Right.
And
it's
that moderate middle that really could go either way. I mean, you're actively disengaged. We do a lot of work around emotional intelligence as a key driver around engagement. And there's a direct correlation to how emotionally intelligent an organization is. And when you get to active disengagement, you almost have to kind of slice out that population, because it may be they've got to a point where these are the kinds of folks that are sabotaging. And,
working against their best and in a really not great state. Right, right.
So I think it's really, leveraging the power of it. And even in an organization, and I always say this, because a lot of, I'm working with up and coming leaders kind of in that director of VP, SVP, so they're not quite at the top of that high growth phase. And they're like, well, how do I grow and be a purpose-driven leader if I'm reporting to a leadership team that are a little bit still in that old school model, we're very binary, I'm like, look, great leadership at its day should never be, don't put a governor on great leadership. Go be a great leader.
Right.
And you need to speak the language of your leadership, but your ideas, your value at the end of the day will shine through.
What a powerful challenge, I think.
And I've worked with teams that are in organizations that are in complete chaos. And, we'll be working with a team and this one team I worked with, and I said, it's kind of like, the leadership team, new CEO, it's total chaos. I'm like, and you either let that chaos get, or you just go leave.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, because I had three teams I coached within a corporation. It's almost like a tale of three little pigs. One leader said, hey, I've been here 19 years. I'll just weather it and wait for the leaders to to figure out what our central purpose is.
Mm-hmm.
The other said, well, I'm going to go find out. So she went on an exploring journey to go talk and figure out her relevance. And then the other one said, look, we have to make our relevance and be the best team we can be and create our own sense of purpose. And they'll figure out, and then we'll line it up, because we can't wait to be successful because
right.
they're waiting
right.
and working on something.
Right, right.
And as I look back at those three stories, you know, one client was exited in a layoff. The other was transitioned out. And the leader that actually just said, look, we got to make our own destiny and be powerful and be relevant and make sure that we, whenever they come to take a look at our unit, they're going to see as much power as we can. That's the only thing that keeps us safe and powerful. And so while everybody else was in fear, they were doing great work and supporting each other. And so, you know, as the leadership team came up, then that pulled them right into that that college center.
Okay.
So
okay.
even within organizations that don't have leaders, you can be the change you seek. You know, you have to create your own little nucleus and sometimes, you know, your own little bubble.
Right.
But there's power there. And so you can create that sense of purpose, and you can have that impact on your group even while, and then after a while it begins to hopefully engage others, because they're seeing people talk about it. It has a different feel and vibe. You can physically see, feel, and engage differently with a team that has
yeah.
purpose.
I'm really encouraged by the extent to which you embrace purpose as a priority in the way that you help leaders discover, claim, and work towards it. I'm really interested to learn more about, if you were to go deliver a State of the Leader address and to talk about the current landscape with regard to, let's say that it's a soil that, you know, purpose is a fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe the current mindset of leadership in general around the message of purpose? As a priority, do you feel like it's a receptive place? Do you feel like it's lip service? Do you feel like it is something that's already there that just kind of needs to be stimulated to grow? Well, like, what's your thing on the pulse there?
I still think we got a lot of work to do, candidly. And again, I think it depends on the industry and the impact.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that industries that are more consumer focused really have to tap into the greater consumer need for being socially conscious and
mm-hmm.
being connected. And so you begin to see almost a movement based on kind of economic impact.
Right.
And you still find, you know, I do a lot of work in technology, and when you find you're more on the deep tech side, they're just so far removed oftentimes from the face of the consumer
mm-hmm.
that you begin to see that coming through. So I think there's a certain kind of movement happening based on kind of what industry you're in and kind of what your audience are.
Okay.
But you are also beginning, I think you're also beginning to see, you know, companies. I mean, I was just reading a story, actually Pepsi, their female, you know, CEO and what she's doing in terms of, you know, making the company relevant, much bigger than, their products and their sustainability
right.
movement and
right.
other things, because
right.
you know, there's a need for organizations to tap into to even maintain a sense of competitive advantage. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's got to be tied to something that is broader, bigger, or our relevance just slips away. So, you know, you're beginning to see people, you're beginning to see role model companies that
right.
are doing and doing it well,
right.
and they're changing it. People are, I think, you know, success continues to breed more success.
I completely agree. And I think that, you know, the evidence is growing deeper and deeper that companies that pursue purpose, not only from a talent and leadership perspective, but just in the way that they do business, thrive, you know, outperform. And, you know, it is not hard to make the dots connect to your head that if you got people that are really dialed into the work and showing up in an inspired way, you know, they're going to be the rat that gets to the cheese first.
Absolutely.
In the markets, right?
I mean, it's just smart business. And I always say, I mean, as I say to my leaders, and it's funny because nobody comes to coaching, you know, and there's always a persisting problem or there's a little bit of an issue or something. And maybe, hey, I want to get that next promotion. There might be a business rationale for it, but it all comes back to central purpose. I mean,
exactly.
You cannot, I'm like, you cannot do this work. You cannot be a leader until their purpose is an essential ingredient that we have to look at. And even clients that are resistant to it, it's kind of like, just hold on to it. You know, it's almost like you gotta hold, as a coach, you gotta hold a space for the vision of where a client's gonna be because they don't see it yet.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of like, you know, really helping them understand. And so it's interesting. So I'll work with a leader and they're like, oh, I just wanna kind of, they're still in that get it done mode. But when they start getting a taste and kind of begin to see and kind of begin to see the results, it's phenomenal. They're like, wow.
Well, when you see, I mean, you think about that as an opportunity, and you see the resistance that happens from leadership even in the current state, and the lack of their priority in terms of adopting it. You know, what does the business case for purpose need to look like in order to be able to move leaders to bring purpose as a priority in the way that they do business and the way that they develop it?
Well, I think it's going to be, you know, colleagues and I joke around, it's like the world runs on power and money. I think there's an economic empowerment movement.
Right.
I think the bottom line is it's going to become a talent issue. I mean, we always talk about it, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about supply and demand and what we care about and business trends swing. But, you know, if your competitors, you know, have purpose and you don't, people are going to gravitate towards it. So it really is a huge talent and retention issue. And loss. I mean, with no purpose or no significant push that I'm a human being that you care about and what I care about matters here.
Wow.
I'll cross the street for $50 extra.
Wow.
You know, whereas, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, when you create meaning and purpose for somebody in an environment, you can pay them less. I mean,
right.
I don't, you
That's
know,
exactly
I mean,
right.
I mean,
exactly
I mean
right.
you know, in the grand scheme of things, I mean,
and I think it's all too
not
often,
that that's the goal, but I mean,
it's not the goal,
there,
but I think, you know, if you're tapping into what rewards a person, it's not always 100% financial, right?
I mean, I had a client that I was talking with. She worked in a healthcare organization, very culture-centric, just a phenomenal place to work, and she was offered another job that paid $30,000 more than what she was earning, and we were actually having a conversation. I mean, $30,000 isn't pretty significant.
Right.
I mean, you know, as I said, well, you know, you have three children. Let's talk about the college fund and other things.
Right.
So I said, you know, my goal is to help you look at it from a complete 360 view. But she's like, wow. She's like, this is a company of a great mission and core. I mean, literally with, you know, having this discussion, most people would be like, right, promotion, $30,000 more. It's like, but this culture has so much of what I believe in, and this culture, they're, you know, good company, but don't have kind of that same feel. I'm like, well, maybe you can go there and begin to build a culture movement.
Right.
You know, but we have lots of conversation of, I mean, to really think that, you know, it's that significant.
And I think those conversations are happening more and more frequently. People are comparing companies and their missions and their, you know, their permissiveness as a culture for having people think about what their purpose is and how they can connect their own purpose to the purpose of the organization and thrive. And I think, you know, from my perspective, I'm really interested to see what's the tipping point? Yeah, that we're currently, and I say this to leaders often, you know, currently it's kind of a nice to have, like just looking at purpose as this empowerment, you know, anybody that you can, you know, kind of infuse into your organization, right? It's a vitamin that you can put in your organization. It's kind of a nice to have that world. As you watch the workforce continue to change and evolve, particularly with millennials coming into it, with a screaming cry that purpose needs to be a priority for organizations that I get excited about. And if you don't have purpose as a part of your organization, you can watch me leave as soon as I, you know, get whatever basic needs I have satisfied. You know, at some point, there's going to be a tipping point from it being a nice to have to a your company can't thrive. You can't exist. You can't keep a good workforce in place without purpose as a
well. Company. I mean, and I always say to the leader, you got to decide, you know, what kind of health, you know, using the vitamin and the aspirin analogy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's so fascinating about purpose is it's an invigorating vitamin that allows you to ward off all, you know, external viruses.
And
when they you know, putting it into the terms of vitamin and aspirin, I mean, every day, I mean, and any leader on this knows that they spend so much of their time firefighting. And the other thing is they're not fighting the competition. A lot of times it's the internal fight of people and teams and other things.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't make the rules, but, you know, conversations with people about their purpose, a little bit of career development, so they are having some say and control in their future. And I will, you know, just humor me on a science experiment to watch what will happen to your team if you interject just a little sense of purpose, just a little bit.
Yeah.
And watch the way people respond. And I took a client this past year from mediocre engagement scores to 100% engagement. 100% engagement.
Does that even exist? That's outstanding.
100% engagement. First time it's ever happened.
Wow.
I taught my client that got 87. He's doing great. I mean, because we're working on, this is a company, it's phenomenal. And they measure engagement as part of their, they measure it. You get your productivity in what you produce is measured. Your engagement and your people and your leadership are weighted.
Wow.
And you cannot move up the ranks of leader until you prove out both.
That's fascinating. Have you seen that be a rare thing in terms of the way leaders are evaluated, or is that something that's growing in popularity?
You know, I think more progressive organizations are making that because, I mean, you want your leadership. I mean, at the end of the day, the higher up you go, the more you got to motivate, inspire,
exactly.
and catalyze an organization. So
yes.
if you're not building in those skills and committing and measuring it, you know, we're just getting what we get.
Yeah.
And so if it's important, then it becomes an important competency that you're measuring. But what was interesting about it is, and as we went back and reflected on it, it was, at the end of the day, it was just a series of ongoing dialogue, communication, and conversation about how what they were doing was important to the business, how what they were doing was important to the team, and how what they were doing was important to them.
Mm-hmm.
And where they felt this was weighing into their career trajectory and how he was going to be an advocate for them, whether they were there 2 years or 10 years. But that sense of conversation, and you know, when I interviewed them, and they said, you know, I've been here for 20 years, and nobody's ever had a conversation with me about my career. And that's just staggering to me. It's like,
what is going on with people?
It's like, it's 4 hours a year.
But you hear people,
all the time
leave because they didn't have any sense of where their career was headed. I mean, and then you start, you know, employers, even in the marketplace, start to have a brand. You know, there's some organizations that you just don't have any sense, there's no career path. You know, you'll hear things like that. And
but I would say even career path, I mean, because a lot of people, the career path and career trajectory is one thing, but I think it comes back to a sense of purpose is a deep sense of care.
Mm-hmm.
I think that at the end of the day, you've got to demonstrate that you care.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not, you know, as I say to my leaders, you're not in charge of your career. You know, I did this little talk with one of my leaders, and it's like, who owns your career? You do, silly.
Right, right. Your career is
your
called
career
yours.
It's yours.
Yeah.
It's your career, and
right.
I'm here to be a conduit. I'm
right.
going to help you with that.
Right.
But I'm not here for, you know, I'm here to be a resource for you to help develop and grow your career.
Right.
And we did a whole kind of thing about what's your purpose and, you know, how do you build your career? How do you build a career that matters? And when you're, but because you got to own it.
Right.
And, so I just, you know, as you look and see, you know, I always say, you know, we're always chasing the next leadership, you know, the big idea or the silver bullet. And I'm like, you know, exceptional principles well executed consistently over time, understanding that care and purpose, sense of purpose,
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean that they have to be the work that they are. It's just, it needs to be in their mind. environment and understand that we all have a central purpose, and somehow, some way, it must be expressed.
It is our human.
It's almost a human right. We have to find a way. It's got to come out in some way,
shape, or form. And some companies are going to be the first to the spot to be able to get that. They will use it
as a competitive advantage.
That's exactly
and
right.
And it cannot be false. That sense of caring and not, it'll be interesting because there's just too much transparency, you know, whether it's Glassdoor or other things, it's got to be genuine.
And even if you go to Glassdoor now or even, just talk to people beyond the exit interviews and satisfaction, you hear pretty heavy hints at lack of purpose within the organization.
Oh,
I think it's really powerful.
And now in career work that we're doing, after we get the peripherals, they're all looking the same.
Mm-hmm.
In the grand scheme of things,
right.
Norm and all of that.
Right.
But the big conversation is, what's the culture?
Right.
Who are the people? What's the leader?
Right.
I always say at some point, stop following the company, follow the leader.
Right.
What's that leader going to be like? I'm like, ask them to interview the people that are around them.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one client that it was really interesting because he said before I leave my really great job and come to you, he's like, I'd like to talk to some people. And the guy said, hey, I'm going to give you the name of two ex-employees.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that's progressive. He says, I want you to really understand my leadership style,
I think they'll be free
to talk with you, and I feel confident enough in my leadership that you'll see what I'm about.
That's really powerful.
I thought that was really powerful
that he
was willing to be that vulnerable. He said, because I want to be successful, but I know my success is tied to my ability to engage and be part of my leader's world.
That's a really fascinating place to leave, I think, this conversation, particularly the point you made a little while ago that in my mind is still echoing off the wall around people are going to start to see purpose as a competitive advantage.
Oh my gosh, really.
I think that's really powerful. Thank you so much for
I'm delighted to get up early
this morning to come.
See in the city in that early light.
Right, and we watched the sun rise and we're still chatting, but we're going to stop now. And I really appreciate you coming to spend some time with us this morning.
Yeah.
And I'm really fascinated about the opportunity to bring you and your learnings to leaders and others in talent organizations that are trying to thrive on the next level and see purpose as an opportunity to do it. Hopefully you've enjoyed the conversation I've had with Jody. I know that I have. And from that, I look forward to continuing to talk to you in the coming weeks with other leaders that have similar perspectives. And with that, we'll leave you with the song that we always do, Free Your Dreams by Shante Can, and definitely encourage you to go download it as she's been so generous and abundant with allowing us to have her show her song be our theme song, if you will. And with that, we'll leave you and remind you to find your forte, compose your masterpiece, and play your crescendo. Have a great day.
your heart and